بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إحرام Okay. So we were talking about Ihram, and remember that we mentioned that Ihram is a state, and it's indicated by clothing, but we also talked about the fact that Ihram is called Ihram because it makes things prohibited. Ihram in the Arabic language, Ahrama yuhrimu Ihram, Ihram means to make something prohibited. So this state makes certain things prohibited. And we need to understand what the prohibitions are in a state of Ihram. Prohibition number one. In a state of Ihram, romance is prohibited in all forms. So verbal romance, you're not going to write a love letter, okay? Physical romance, kissing, embracing, etc. All this is prohibited in a state of Ihram. In fact, this prohibition is so major, is so important, that if a husband and wife engage in conjugal relations in a state of Ihram, the Ihram breaks and the Hajj breaks. They have to take off their Ihram, go home, come back the next year, and do Hajj then. Okay? So, that's the first thing that's prohibited. The second thing that's prohibited is hunting or assisting in hunting of a land-dwelling animal. Okay? So you cannot take your bow and arrow and hunt an animal. And you can't, you know, like, stay quiet and say, like, check it out, there's an animal over there, you know, and like you're not talking, but you're just like, I don't know, but you might wanna, you know. No, you can't do that either. So that's not going to happen because no one's hunting. But I just want you to know the prohibition. This is a prohibition, applying fragrance on the body, clothing, etc. in any manner. Okay, now listen to me. It's not scent, it's fragrance. Okay? It's not scent, it's fragrance. So, I don't know, some guy's eating some salin. It's garlicky, okay? So now he's like, oh, I ate garlic. Okay, let's make it common. He eats garlic potato chips. Now he's like rubbing the scent off his lips and all that. No, it's not the scent, it's fragrance that's the problem. A lot of things have natural scent. Ketchup has scent. If you drop ketchup on your arm or drop ketchup on your arm, you're not going to be like freaking out. It's fragrance. You know, things that are perfumed. Things that are used to achieve a state where you feel like you've engaged in fragrance. Like perfume, deodorant, cologne, scented towels. These types of things. So those are the things that are prohibited. Okay, I'll give you the best example. One big example. When you enter into Saudi Arabia, they want your fingerprint. Okay, they take everybody's fingerprint. So the fingerprint machines are not perfect. So every time you put your finger on, it should take your print, but a lot of times it doesn't work. Then if they can't make it work, they'll take your hand and spray that hand sanitizer, okay? And once they spray the hand sanitizer, that cleans the finger of oil, and then they put it on the print reader, and it gets a better print. So I remember that people were spraying hand sanitizer, and everybody was getting upset. SubhanAllah, they should pray my sadaqah for me. I messed up my... I put on this because it smells so strong. But that's not prohibited because that is not a fragrance. That's a chemical in a solution. That's not a fragrance. Now, if you have Apple hand sanitizer, not Apple, the computer company, Apple, the fruit scent, that's a different story. But the mere smell of the ethanol that's in the hand sanitizer does not create a problem for the ihram. Is that clear? So what do we have to avoid? We have to avoid scented soaps, perfume, scented towelettes, deodorant, these types of things. Now, if you go into the bathroom and they got that cheap soap that has nothing in it, but you get the smell of the cheap soap, that's not a problem. Okay? All right. Next thing is removing hair or nails from any part of the body. That's also prohibited. So, we cannot cut our hair, we cannot remove our hair, we cannot clip our nails. That's also prohibited. Stitched clothing in the shape of the body or sealed footwear for men is prohibited. So wearing stitched clothing, I don't know, a t-shirt, wearing undergarment, wearing pants, wearing a baseball cap, wearing socks, all that's prohibited. Again, the central foot of the bone must be uncovered. Okay, covering the head for men. Men cannot cover their head. Covering the face for both men and women. Men and women cannot cover their face. If a woman wants to maintain her hijab through niqab, she can wear like a baseball cap and then hang the niqab over the visor so it doesn't touch the face. Fighting or arguing with anyone. And then somebody always asks, what if I'm right? Even if you're right. Okay? Fighting or arguing with anyone, even if you're right, even if it's your husband or wife. No arguing, no fighting with anyone in a state of ihram. Okay, now, those are the, what are the major prohibitions? Prohibition, big, number 111, romance. Prohibition number 2, scent, fragrance. Prohibition number 3, practical prohibitions. Hunting, I'm putting on the side. Practical prohibition number 3 would be, clothing, stitched clothing. Prohibition 4, face and head. Right? Head for males and face for males and females. And prohibition 5, fighting or arguing with anyone. Okay? So these are the major prohibitions. These are the key prohibitions. I don't want to say the word major. These are the key prohibitions. Okay, now what's permissible? So let's talk about something's permissible in the context of that discussion. So now the question, it's super hot, which is going to be super hot. Okay, so get rid of that. Get used to that psychologically. It's super hot. And just the sun is beating down on you, so you want to hold up an umbrella over your head. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Now, can you wear the hat with the umbrella that they have at like Great America?
No.
No. But can you hold up an umbrella over your head? Yes. Okay, you can wear your glasses, no problem. You can wear a ring, no problem. You can wear a hearing aid, no problem. You can wear a watch, no problem. Okay? Can you wear a money belt? Yes, if you have a belt, you're allowed to wear a money belt because of the necessity of the money belt. So the money belt often is a belt that you'll wear, you wrap around your waist, it contains your important documents and money, and maybe your hotel key. So you're allowed to have this money belt because of its necessity. There's two types of money belts. The first is the one that the boxers, you know when the boxers win a championship, they got this big, thick belt that they get? So they make that kind of money, they can make a money belt that looks like that, that is really thick leather material. So this would be okay. And you can buy those, you know, in a typical Hajj store or in Saudi Arabia. There's another money belt that there's a picture of over here on the screen. I personally like this money belt because it's a little, it's much more comfortable. It's a pouch with the like an elastic strap around the running around the edge of it. And it's called the money belt. It's very comfortable and it easily wraps up with the ihram as you wrap up the ihram as you're folding it to wear it. So I personally like it because it's concealed and it's comfortable. So the only thing I'll say is that this money belt is available at like sports stores. Like for example, there's a store in Schaumburg called REI. I think it's called Recreational or Recreation Equipment Incorporated. They sell backpacks and tents and shoes and hiking, and they sell this money belt, which I found to be very comfortable. I will say, however, that it comes in two versions. There's a silk version and a non-silk version. Obviously, you have to get the non-silk version. Okay, another thing that's permissible. You're wearing your two white pieces of cloth, and you go to the bathroom and one falls on the ground, and you say, I don't want that one anymore. Okay? So then you go and get another white piece of cloth. No problem. You can swap out the pieces of cloth as much as you want. Okay? Washing the body, no problem. The only thing is that you should not do it to remove dirt. Okay? So the reason that you would wash the body in Hajj is it's so hot that you just got to bring your body temperature down, which does happen, or can happen, I should say, in which case then you could go ahead and wash the body. Using unscented soap, no problem. If the hair falls naturally, no problem. Covering the body with a blanket or a sleeping bag, some people will say, my sleeping bag is stitched, my blanket is stitched, can I use it? Yes, you can, no problem. It's not stitched in the shape of the body, okay? But when you use a blanket or a sleeping bag, you cannot pull it over your head. You know, a lot of people like to sleep and then they pull the whole blanket over their head. So you cannot pull it over your head. It should be up to your neck. Your face and your head should remain uncovered. Using a pillow, it's permissible. Some people say, I have such a thick, nice, comfortable down pillow that when I lay down in it, my head goes into it, right? Pillow is fine. Using a miswak is fine. If you have luggage and you carry it on your head because you're so tired, that's fine. Covering a face with a tissue when you sneeze, that's fine. Drying the face with a towel, you're not supposed to cover your face, but you're touching your face with a towel, that's fine. Okay? So these are the types of things that are permitted. Okay, so now I'm going to stop. Hang on 1 minute. I'm going to stop and take 5 minutes to catch up on the questions. Okay? So before I catch up on the brothers' questions, let's take a few sister questions. Is fragrance-free and alcohol-free deodorant, hand sanitizer, etc. allowed? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So that was the question. Now they asked another question about the cycle, but I don't want to talk about that because it depends on so many angles, and I don't want to... We could do a whole seminar on that. Okay, so if we perform Hajj Tamattu, what is Hajj Tamattu? What is Hajj Tamattu? You can ask a friend. Yeah, this friend. Okay, go ahead. Okay, so Hajj Tamattu is when you perform, you get into Ihram, you perform Umrah, you get out of the Ihram. How do you get out of the Ihram? You shave the head or cut the hair, and then you put on another Ihram later and you do Hajj. So the question is, are we shaving our head twice, and are we cutting our hair twice in Hajj Tamattu? The answer is yes. You're cutting your head twice. Okay. Okay, now there's another technical question. I can't answer that. Let me just put these here. Okay. Again, questions that are not specifically related to what I'm discussing, I won't answer. Hand sanitizer, I already answered. So we're not supposed to comb our hair in a state of ihram. Does that mean for 5 days you don't comb your hair? What if it gets tangled? So you can comb the hair gently, but you can't do it in a way that's removing hair. So it's not that rigorous, like combing and taking out the hair and throwing it away and then combing. So it needs to be done in such a way that hair is not removed. So it should be done gently. Okay. Is Labbaik recited for the Umrah Ihram too? Yes. Anytime you want to enter into a state of Ihram, you also have to recite Talbiyah. Okay? I'll get this in a minute. Okay. All right. Okay, brothers' questions. I mean, we're not going to be able to answer all these questions, so I just kind of take 5, 6, and then go ahead.
I was studying about that. Can we use a toothpaste? No.
Question, can we use toothpaste? Okay. Yes, you can use toothpaste, but it should be fragrance-free. Okay. Now, where do you find fragrance-free toothpaste? You have two choices. Choice A is you buy it in Saudi Arabia. They have it in the grocery store there. Choice B is that you can go to Whole Foods. And Whole Foods has a toothpaste by a company called Toms of Maine.
Toms of Maine?
Toms of Maine. Toms of Maine. And they make a scent-free toothpaste. Fragrance-free toothpaste. And they make it because some people are allergic to fragrance. So they make it for that purpose. But in Ihram, we're allergic to fragrance, so it fits our purpose.
Whole Foods.
Not that I have stock in Whole Foods. Just encourage. You can go anywhere where they have Toms of Maine. Online if you want. Okay, next. Yes.
Do you take a shower every day just for hygiene purposes or no?
So when you're in a state of ihram, you don't want to take it for hygiene purposes. You don't want to use it for cleanliness because part of the state of ihram is a denigration of ourselves before Allah. So that dusty nature that we get into, that actually is something that is a light. It's something that's encouraged. Not that you should throw dust on yourself, but it's expected that you're going to be in a state that's going to appear that you're traveling. So we don't want to take a shower to rejuvenate ourselves in that way. If we need to take a shower to remove dirt from the body, to remove the like sweat from the body, because like I'll give you an example. It gets so hot that there's literally like, you know, this thick layer of sweat on people, and then they can't sweat further to get cooled down because the body's not able to sweat off on that layer. So, you know, then go wash everything off and get back into your clothing of ihram. That's fine. But for the sole purpose of achieving cleanliness and presenting ourselves as clean, that shouldn't be done. Yes? So the question is, after the Umrah, do you have to go back to the Miqat boundary? We'll talk about that. It's coming. That's next episode. Yeah.
So for the unscientific products that are available in the market, most of them are animal products.
Sorry, most of them are what?
Animal products.
Okay.
Are we allowed to use them?
So the question is that the point being made is that many of the unscented products are animal products. So I would need to know the specific example. So, for example, this Tom's of Maine toothpaste that I told you, there's no animal products in that. Similarly, if it's a soap, it's probably fine. So long as it's not pork-derived, it's probably fine. I would need to know the specifics before I could say.
Can I consider myself a
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? I couldn't hear. Okay. Yeah. So the question is, can I consider myself in a state of ihram because I'm 100% committed to Hajj and that's all I'm thinking about right now? Right? So the answer is that the state of ihram is a state that is entered prior to entering into the haram. Okay? So you won't be in a state of ihram right now because you don't want to enter it now because there's so many... So there's so many prohibitions that would come upon you that you wouldn't be able to manage it without violating those prohibitions. But if you said to yourself, I want to enter into a state of ihram today, and I'm going to maintain that ihram for the next 2 months, there's no problem. You can do that. But the issue will be that you will probably violate that ihram so many times that it will take away from the specialness of the actual Hajj itself. So we should enter into ihram at the appropriate time in the sequence of the journey. Yes. So the question is, can I go into a state of ihram while I'm on the plane? Okay. So if you want to go into a state of ihram while you're on the plane, you can. The practical way by which that works, so it's probably impractical to make wudu in the plane bathroom and change into ihram in the plane bathroom. You'd have to be really talented to be able to change into ihram in the plane bathroom, especially to tie the bottom part because there's no space there. But maybe the more practical question would be this. I made wudu in Germany. I prayed the prayer in Germany. I put the two pieces of white cloth on in Germany. But I didn't make the intention and recite the talbiyah. Now I go on the plane, and I'm comfortably on the plane, I'm boarded, and then I recite, the plane takes off, and an hour before I land in Mecca, you know, right before I cross the Miqat, or I land in Jeddah, right before I cross the Miqat, I say, Labbaik, Allahumma Labbaik, and make the intention. Make the intention and say Labbaik. So you can do that. So you can enter into Ihram. The only condition is it needs to be before the boundary. And in fact, when you're on the plane, usually the pilot will make an announcement. We'll be crossing the Miqat in 20 minutes. They'll warn everybody so that you can begin to make sure that you're prepared and be ready to make the intention. Okay? All right. We're on the same page? All right. Now, once we have... Okay. Once we have put on the ihram and we're on the plane and we're headed to Mecca, the first thing we have to do is do Umrah, correct? So let's walk through these steps. The first step is that we're going to arrive in Saudi Arabia, most likely, if you're headed from here to Saudi Arabia. Okay, so obviously you're going to enter into Ihram. We've already talked about that. You'll arrive at Jeddah. That's the most common destination. Some people will arrive in Medina. Some people will arrive in Jeddah. Most people will arrive in Jeddah. When you arrive at Jeddah, you'll go through immigration. That takes a while. You'll then hand over your passport. So they actually physically will take your passport. Well, actually, let me put it in sequence. You'll go through immigration. You'll get your luggage. You'll hand over your passport. You'll check in with your organizer. You'll get transported to Mecca. And then you'll eventually get to your hotel. So what I want to say, first thing I want to say, is that from the time the plane lands in Jeddah to the time that you end up in your hotel, you'll be lucky if it's 6 hours, and it's usually 10 to 12 hours. Okay? So, what does that mean? First of all, what does it matter? It doesn't matter, right? Because the thing that I want to get across with everyone here is that once you leave for Hajj, it doesn't matter where you are or what you do. The whole journey is going to take the same time anyway. If you're the first person off the plane or the last person off the plane, you're coming home the same time. If you're the first person in immigration or the last person in immigration, you're still coming home the same time. Nothing is going to change by getting stressed out, by pushing others, by trying to get first in line, by trying to be the first off the plane. So I recommend two things on the plane. The first thing, get rid of your watch. Just forget that time even exists. It doesn't matter. Everything takes as long as it takes. It doesn't make a difference. You're on Hajj, you're on Hajj. You're getting your reward. Every moment is rewarded, so why worry? Okay? Number one. Number two, be the last person off the plane. Not so that they're screaming at you, get off the plane, but don't worry about being the first person off the plane, because once you're like, you know, what happens is even before the plane is still landing and people are jumping up, you know, we hit the runway, everybody's flying all over the place. Forget about it. You'll be stressed. You know, like if we start the journey that way, then how's it going to end? I would just relax. I'm in ihram. I got my stuff good. Labbaik, Allahumma labbaik. Labbaik la sharika laka labbaik. Do my dhikr. Relax. Keep making dua to Allah. When everybody who's in a rush is off the plane, I get off the plane, get on the bus, and it's going to take everybody. And guess what? All the people that were rushing, they all end up in the waiting room waiting for the next 3 hours anyway. Nobody got any closer any quicker. Because what they do, they gather the whole group together, they stick you in a waiting room, and you sit. And you sit for 4 hours because they're processing the groups that came before. And no one person can escape. You cannot escape your group. They will process your group at one time. And your whole group will go through together at one time. So forget about the watch. Forget about being in a rush. Focus on dhikr. Focus on Allah. Focus on the opportunity of a lifetime. And enjoy the journey. Okay? Relax. Now, here's the process. Look here. You'll get off the plane. You'll deboard. There'll be a bus that will pick you up. The bus will drive you to the terminal. From the terminal, you'll be sitting in waiting areas. The waiting areas have bathrooms, they have soft drinks, they have chips, you know, snacks. Eventually, your group will be called. When your group is called, you'll go to the visa processing lines. The visa processing lines, there's probably like 50 lines of hundreds of people. Relax. Don't worry. It's a very common thing that people start looking around and they're saying, you know, I would do it this way. And how come this guy went on break? And how come the Saudis don't hire 25 more people? I mean, look, if you knew how to solve it, Allah would have made you king of Saudi Arabia. Last time I checked, no king of Saudi Arabia, except the brother in the corner with the jet, is in this gathering. So just relax. Relax. We're not there to criticize. It's a hard job. It's easy to criticize. It's a hard job to check in 3 million people. Okay? And yeah, there's probably always a better way to do it, but it's not our problem. We're not going there to rectify the sequence of events that happened by the Saudi government to get everybody in. The problem actually is not them, it's us. We're not patiently waiting, recognizing that there's thousands and thousands of people before us. So relax. Don't worry about what the people behind the desk are doing. Don't worry about why they went to take a break and drink tea. We all take breaks on our jobs. Okay? Just forget about everything and focus on our sins. It's the first time in our life when we don't have to worry about getting caught up with everybody else, and we can sit and think about our own sins for once. So that is the focus. Eventually, we get in the immigration line. After we get through immigration, you'll come out and luggage will be everywhere. Luggage will be upside down, left and right. You just relax. You'll find your luggage. Whatever is there is there. Whatever you need, you'll find, inshallah. Everything is there, but it just takes a little bit of time. You collect your luggage. Then try to help the others in your group. Try to help the others that need help. Collect their luggage. Once you collect your luggage, you'll pick it up. The group will gather together. And you'll come to a point where there'll be a guide who is from Saudi, who is part of the company that's organizing your tent and your things. And that guide is, in the Arabic term for that guide is mu'allim. So listen to this word. You don't need to know the word, but you're going to hear the word all the time. So that's called the mu'allim. So the mu'allim will be there and will help to organize things for your group. Eventually you'll get out. You'll get on a bus. The bus will take you to Mecca and drop you in front of the hotel. Is that clear? How much time will this take? 10 hours, 6 if you're lucky, 14 if it's a slow day. No problem. Relax. You want to sleep on the chair, sleep on the chair in the waiting room. Drink a Coke. Have snacks. Just relax. Okay? Don't worry about what's going on. And then you sit there and say, wait a minute, those Chinese hajis, they came. When did they come, brother? Didn't they come after us? Right? Let me go and see what's going on. So, you know, then the person goes, forget about it. Forget about it. If the Chinese hajis got in before you, it's because Allah put them before you. It's not our problem. Our problem is ourselves. That's the real problem. So we should relax and take advantage of the opportunity and just do dhikr. There will be somebody on your team who will manage all of this. Don't think that what your brother is saying, that we should just blow with the wind. Okay? What I'm trying to say is not your problem. It's not my problem. There is somebody assigned in your group. They will be handling all of this. They will take care of it. They will. But for everybody else, no criticism, no critique. Just relax. Okay? All right. Now some pictures. This is called the Hajj Terminal. And the Hajj terminal is an area where the planes land and the hajis are processed. It's made up of a bunch of these tarps. Inside the Hajj terminal, you can buy things, you can buy food. There's a chicken roast place, if I remember correctly. Okay? These are the buses. This is an old picture. These are the old school buses. Now they have the new modern air-conditioned buses. I should update this picture. Okay? So that's the process. Any questions up till there? Okay, so be ready for just a period of time to relax. Now, the next thing that's going to happen is when you get on the bus, from Jeddah, look here on this screen, from Jeddah to Makkah is a roughly 1 hour bus ride, but with traffic can take an hour and a half. Okay? And what's going to happen is that on that bus ride, you'll probably be super tired. So most people honestly fall asleep. I mean, the moment that bus, everybody's so happy, subhanAllah, we're out of the waiting room, we're on the bus, that everybody just passes out on the bus. But ideally on the bus, what we want to do, labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik, innal hamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk la sharika lak. And we go through and we cross over eventually into the Kaaba. Now, one of the major milestones going from Jeddah to the Kaaba, one of the major milestones is you're going to cross this border. Do you see this border right here? You're going to cross that border. That is the border of the Haram. That's the border of the Haram. What is the Haram? The Haram is a sacred precinct of land which the Kaaba is situated within. It's like the court of Allah. And it has a special status in our deen. So, Once a person enters the haram, in the haram itself, it's unlawful to hunt, trap, or frighten an animal, to chop a tree, to cut a blade of grass, etc. Okay? So it is a place of aman. Listen very carefully. It is a place, it's a sanctuary, it's a place of security, a place of aman. It's a place of safety. And that's very important to us, and we'll talk about why later. Is that clear? Okay, so the milestone of entering the haram invokes a dua that our scholars have shared with us. So this dua is from the scholars. I don't necessarily want to say that you need to memorize or recite this dua, but I want to highlight the attitude that the scholars had when they entered into the haram. So just listen to the translation. O Allah, verily this is your haram. O Allah, verily this is your haram, and the haram of your messenger. It's also the haram of your messenger. Faharrim, so make haram, right? It's your sanctuary. So make haram my meat and my blood and my bones and my skin upon the fire. Now listen, here's the attitude. The haram is a place of security and safety, correct? You cannot cut a blade of grass. You cannot harm an insect. You cannot scare a bird. Okay? So the haram is a place of safety. So we leverage that. We say, oh Allah, this is your haram. This is the haram of your messenger. This is where no one can be harmed. So Ya Allah, also make safe and protect from the hellfire my blood, my bones, my meat. You understand the attitude? So that, we're leveraging the opportunity. If animals cannot be harmed, then how can we who are entering the haram ever be harmed? Does that make sense? So the scholars would say, oh Allah, this is your haram. And this is the haram of your messenger. So make haram my meat, my blood, my bones, my skin, and make them haram upon the hellfire. Oh Allah, protect me from your punishment. The day that you will raise your servants and make me from your awliya and make me from among the people that follow you and turn towards me. Verily, you are the oft-turning, the merciful. Now look, in the haram, what is the haram? Number one, the haram is the place of protection. Number two, the haram is a place of awliya and piety. Number three, the haram is a place that Allah would turns back towards people. So we're leveraging all of that and making dua. Oh Allah, protect me from the hellfire. Oh Allah, protect me from your punishment. Oh Allah, protect. Oh Allah, make me from among the awliya. Oh Allah, make me from among the people of obedience. And oh Allah, make me from among, and turn towards me forgive me. Okay? So this is the type of dua that you want to make. Now, make it in Chinese. It's fine. Make it in Japanese. But the attitude should be there. So this is the attitude that we should have as we're on the bus, crossing from the airport and until when you get to the border of the haram. When you get to the border of the haram, it'll be marked. You'll see that by that border, there's like a big stone gate. Big stone gate. You can't miss it. And there's guards standing there. And the buses slow down when they get there. And it says, no, it says non-Muslims cannot enter. Non-Muslims cannot enter. So that's how you'll know that you've come to that boundary. And so at that point, I mean, you don't ring the alarm bell and wake up everybody. 50% of the bus will be sleeping. But if you happen to be awake, that's a point to stop and say, Ya Allah, I can't believe it. You know, it's like pinching yourself. It's better than winning the lottery. Not that the lottery even has any good in it. But I'm just saying, I won the spiritual lottery. Ya Allah, you selected me to come to your home. And I got this far, I just entered into the haram. So Ya Allah, thank you. And just as this is a place of security where the Prophet ﷺ established that no one can be harmed, Ya Allah, I also am asking that you make me secure from harm and difficulty in this life, and make me secure from the harm and difficulty in the hereafter, and make me secure from the fire of the hereafter, from the hellfire, and make me among those who worship you. And just as the awliya, this is the place of awliya, Ya Allah, make me from among the awliya, make my family from among the awliya, protect me, Ya Allah. And raise me, Ya Allah. This is the type of dua that we should engage in. And You know, it's not about reading a dua from a book, by the way. A lot of times people want to open up a book and start reading dua. That's like, you know, going in front of your mom and saying, "Mom, I'm sorry. Mom, I'm sorry. Mom, I'm sorry. Mom, I'm sorry." Nobody makes dua like that. When a baby cries, you know, a baby loses their mom, you don't have to give them a book and say, "Read this dua. You know, read this and you'll be able to cry." No, they freak out. They freak out and they're panicking and they just start crying, "Mom, mom, mom, mom." We don't need a book. You know, like we're reading, "Oh, Allahumma, 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 Allahumma." You know, we should be fluent. This is not about a bunch of things that we have to recite. It's about an attitude. It's about an attitude to say, "Ya Allah, I won this spiritual lottery. So Ya Allah, I can't believe it. I can't believe that I'm entering into your haram. This was the place the Prophet ﷺ prohibited anything from being harmed. So in the same way, Ya Allah, prohibit your helper from ever harming me. Prohibit your creation from ever harming me. Prohibit the day of judgment from ever harming me. Prohibit the grave from harming me. Prohibit the scorpions in the grave from harming me. Prohibit the snakes for those who don't pay zakah from harming me." We should just be making dua profusely. That's the attitude of the person who enters into the haram. And it doesn't come from a book. It doesn't come from one particular dua. It comes from understanding the nature of the journey. That's where the barakah lies. So we should leverage that. I give you this dua, again, not because I want you to memorize it, but because I want you to understand the attitude of the pious predecessors that came before us. Okay, now, after we enter into haram, the next thing will be to get into the hotel room. The next thing will be to get into the hotel room. Again, assist one another. Don't be in a rush. Don't worry about what the hotel room looks like, or who got what room, or who ended up on what floor, or how come I'm not next to him and he's not next to me. Is that clear? So we don't care about any of that. Look, at the time that you book your package, I know that this become a point of contention, because then you say, "Well, brother, my organizer is going to take advantage of me." You can't solve that anymore. I'll tell you that this isn't the Hilton in San Francisco where you go to the front desk and say, "I don't like my room," and they give you another one. Every room is booked over there. Honestly, when you get the room, you should say, "Thank Allah I have a room." Because honestly, I deserve to sleep on the street with the background that I'm coming with. Because there are people sleeping on the street, by the way. Who am I, you know, that I think that I deserve to sleep in some hotel on the high towers? I mean, honestly, if we had to judge spiritually, yeah, I know, I'm an American, I have an American passport. Look, you know, honestly, if we have to judge spiritually, we should be on the street by the garbage. It's Allah's mercy that we have a room there. So, yes, we pay for a package, and we have expectations. And maybe the tour operator is cheating us, you know, to the nth penny. But it doesn't matter anymore. Because the only loss now is if we lose the Hajj. We already lost the room. If the tour operator, either he's cheating us, or it just didn't work out. It's gone anyway. It's not going to change. I guarantee you it's not going to change no matter how much you scream. The only thing left to lose is the Hajj. So why take a chance on the Hajj? Forget it. Whatever the room is, be happy. Whatever the arrangement is, accept it. Yes, some people sleep on the floor. There's 4 beds in a room. Sometimes there's 5. They put 6 people in a room because that's just the way it works. So you end up sleeping on the floor. Take it. Why? Because Allah will give you double in exchange or triple in exchange. Allah always recognizes who's undergoing the hardship. Allah always captures that and returns it to them. We don't have a blind Lord now, alhamdulillah. Our Lord sees all, hears all, knows all. There's nothing that's hidden from Him. So what are we concerned about? That Allah that sees where we're sleeping is the same Allah that's going to reward us accordingly. So be happy. Be happy with whatever Allah gives us. Because if it was meant for us, we would have done Hajj in a totally different way. Let me tell you something. You know that people complain in the airport, "Oh, brother, it took 12 hours. Why didn't you go in this line? Why didn't you go in that line?" What are you talking about? Do you know how people did Hajj 50 years ago? You know that my teachers used to tell the story of Hajj? Let me tell you their story of Hajj. They would have to take a boat. Why would they take a boat? Because there's no plane. Now they get on a boat. The boat goes from India to Jeddah. When the boat's taking days and days to go. People are sick. They're throwing up. They're getting ill. It's days and days on the boat. When the boat docks, The Saudis stop the boat and make them wait 3 days on the boat before they can get to land. Why? Because if there's any disease on the boat, they want it to spread in the boat, not outside. So they create a little test tube. And you wait 3 days looking at Jeddah before you can get off the boat. Now you tell me, what are we complaining about? People walk to Hajj for God's sake. It took them months to get there. I mean, we are living in the lap of luxury. We should appreciate that. We should be cognizant of the reality of this Hajj. Allah has made it easy for us. It's a blessing upon us. We should recognize it and we should succumb to some humility in the context of it. So the only thing that matters once we get on that plane is securing the Hajj. We've got to secure the Hajj and make it perfect. So whatever the circumstances, we accept it. Okay, if you have a sincere difficulty, discuss it. You know, brother, I've got this illness. I really need to be in this type of setup. It'll work out, inshallah. You know, but for most of us, it should be the opposite. We should get out of our room and we should look at everybody else and say, did you get a room? Are you comfortable? Uncle, are you okay? Sister, are you okay? Brother, have you gotten what you need? Anybody needs a bed? I actually have a bed. I don't mind sleeping on the floor. Please take my bed. That's the person who succeeds. Allah sees it, and Allah always increases them. So that's the attitude. You know, we're part of a team. If the team succeeds, everybody succeeds. So anyway, settle in the hotel room. You'll get your key, and then you'll get your room. Once you get to the room, you got to wait for the luggage. You got to secure the luggage. You can't get excited and run away. And I want to get to the masjid. They will bring the luggage up, help the group get their luggage, secure the luggage, put it in the room. And then you have to make a decision. The decision's going to be, do I want to do Umrah now, or do I want to take a nap and do Umrah later? So that is going to be dependent on the group. But what I want to say is, a lot of times, people are in a rush to do Umrah right away. They get to the hotel, and they say, let's go, we've been waiting to do Umrah. But if you're tired, then you're not going to enjoy the Umrah. You don't want to do Umrah, and you're walking, and you're like, this is such a burden. I'm so tired, I'm sick of this. How many more? We did six. Let's get the seventh one done, man. This is too much. You want to be fresh. You want to enjoy it. So what's the problem with getting some food, eating something, taking a short nap, waking up fresh, and going there rejuvenated and actually performing an act of ibadah like it should be? So, I mean, I'll just tell you my personal rule. I never go straight for Umrah. I will eat something, lie down, sleep for an hour or two. You know, freshen up. And even if it means, you know, sometimes what happens is everybody makes the plan and they arrive at 5 a.m. Now they're like under stress. Oh, it's 5 a.m. If we don't do tawaf and Umrah now, if we don't do our Umrah now, the sun's going to rise, it's going to get too hot, we got to stay in Ihram, we can't do Umrah until 11 o'clock at night, because you know, you want to choose a cool, comfortable time. I don't care. I just spent the last months and months and months preparing and planning. I don't care about 6 hours. So I just go to sleep. Wake up. Wake up when you're comfortable. Obviously, I'm not saying sleep through any prayers, but you'll pop up in 1 hour, you'll see. You cannot be in Mecca and you're sleeping for the next 24 hours. Nobody does that. You just came on a journey. Your whole time balance is all messed up. You'll sleep. You can't sleep for more than a couple hours. You'll pop up. You're totally fresh. Go perform Umrah. So what I want to say is that rest is okay. Now, if you slept the whole plane ride, you slept the whole bus ride, you woke up and you're in Mecca, subhanAllah, you're totally fresh, go for it. No problem. But don't think that there's some sort of like bad adab in resting. I actually think it's good adab. Okay, once you decide when you're gonna perform Umrah, the next step will be to go to the masjid. So now the next step is to go to the masjid. So you'll make wudu before going to the masjid. Okay, so in the hotel, you'll go ahead and make wudu. This is recommended even if you already have wudu, so you're kind of like freshening yourself for the masjid. If a woman is in her monthly cycle, then she cannot go to the masjid. If a woman is in her monthly cycle, then she cannot go to the masjid, so she has to wait in her room. So she will do a dhikr in her room until the opportunity arises. The next is to enter the masjid. Now, I want to say a few things about entering the masjid. This is a very simple schematic of the masjid, and it's rapidly changing. I'm not presenting this schematic so that you understand the map. Instead, I'm presenting the schematic so that I can highlight something. When the Prophet ﷺ performed his umrah, he entered the masjid through this gate, which is called the Salam Gate, Bab al-Salam. This gate has subsequently been closed off, particularly during Hajj, it's closed off. So you won't enter the Salam Gate. But I want you to... Okay. So, Rasulullah ﷺ, when he went for Umrah, he entered from Bab al-Salam. See, this is arrows pointing at Salam Gate. So he entered from that gate. Now, it's also possible, if you can't enter through Bab al-Salam, the sort of the next best gate would be through Bab al-Umrah, this Umrah gate here. See this gate here? So that would be another possibility. But realistically speaking, I just want to say, just enter from any gate that you can conveniently enter through. This is a very big structure, and it's very hard to navigate, and there's a lot of crowds, and if everybody tries to enter through one door, it's never going to happen. So I want you to say, make the intention that if the Salam Gate was open and easy to access, I would do so. However, because it's not easy for me to access and because it's closed, I'm entering from any gate. So you'll enter from whatever gate's near your hotel and convenient. Okay? When you enter the masjid, you should enter with the right foot. It's sunnah to enter all masajid with the right foot. We also recite the dua, right? Allahumma aftahli abwaab rahmatik. Okay? And we enter with humility, and we enter attentive to the fact that we are entering the masjid of the haram. Now, once we enter the masjid, then we start heading towards the Kaaba. While we're heading towards the Kaaba, we want to recite the talbiyah. Labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik, innal hamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk la sharika lak. The Kaaba is located in the center of the masjid, so whichever door you enter, you head towards the center of the masjid. Once you figure out where the Kaaba is, ideally what you'd like to do is keep your head down, enter with humility, try to head towards the Kaaba, you'll see everybody walking in that direction. And then eventually what you'd like to do is once you come in front of the Kaaba somewhere, move to the side, and when you get to the side, find a place where you can comfortably make dua. That's the ideal. So you want to try to locate a place where you can make dua. Once you get to the Kaaba, then you'll raise your head, look at the Kaaba, and begin to make dua. Now why are we going through this sequence? Because the time that we see the Kaaba is a time of the acceptance of dua. The time that we see the Kaaba is a time of acceptance of dua. So, what are some dua that we can make? One dua that we can make, there's debate, actually, it's interesting. There's debate amongst the scholars as to the different types of dua that a person should make at this when they first see the Kaaba. For example, a person can make dua, O Allah, enter me into Jannah without taking account. Person can make dua, O Allah, grant me your love. Person can make dua, O Allah, protect me in the grave. O Allah, accept my Hajj. So many du'as can be made. And in fact, many du'as should be made. There's debate amongst the scholars as to what's the first du'a that the person should make. So Imam Abu Hanifa, rahmatullah alayh, has recommended that the first du'a that a person should make is, O Allah, accept all my future du'a. O Allah, accept all my future du'a. So that takes care of all the other du'as, right? It's like, you know the story where they get the lantern and they can have three wishes and they rub on it and they make the wishes? I mean, I always wondered, like, why don't you just make the wish, give me three more wishes, right? Why do you have to get stuck on three? So, I mean, this is the wisdom of our scholars, you know? You get in front of the lantern, rub it, give me all the wishes. So, Ya Allah, accept all of my du'as. And then, boom, 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 just start making them. Ya Allah, grant me your love. Ya Allah, grant me enter into Jannah without account. Ya Allah, grant me water from the Rasulullah's hand on the Day of Judgment. Ya Allah, expand my grave. Ya Allah, make my family among the pious. Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Allah. Just keep going. Keep going, keep going. Ask whatever you want. It's open season. Just ask away. So I would just sit there and relax. It's a very spiritual time. I mean, I don't think that anyone could not be knocked off their feet at that time. I mean, you'll see all over the world, whoever comes, it's always a spiritual time for everyone. So we should go with it. We should sit, relax, don't be in a rush. Take the time you need. Make as many dua as possible. I mean, one dua, Ya Allah, give me everything Rasulullah SAW asked for. Protect me from everything Rasulullah SAW asked for protection from. Right? I mean, don't stop. Just keep going, going, going. Okay. So that then completes the entry of the masjid and the sighting of the Kaaba. Now we have to do Umrah. Right? That's the next responsibility. Okay. So, any questions up till there? Okay, let's take three questions from here. I don't know. I'm not doing a good job with these. Can we wear a sun hat that covers the head part for protection from the sun, or should it be a visor? So this is for a sister, not for a brother, obviously. So a sister can wear a sun hat if she wants protection from the sun. The only reason I recommended a visor is if somebody wants to be able to maintain hijab through niqab, then they can wear the visor and bring their niqab over their visor so that it doesn't touch the face. Can we remove hijab in ihram to make wudu? Yes. A person can remove hijab. In fact, if a person takes a shower in a state of ihram, how are they going to take a shower? With their ihram on? No. They take out the ihram, go take a shower, put the ihram back on. The ihram is the name of clothing that signifies a state. So you can remove those sheets, take a shower, put the sheets right back on. If a person breaks wudu, do they break ihram? No. A person can break wudu, obviously, in a state of ihram. In fact, how would you sleep otherwise? Can a woman wear sandals, or do they need socks? No, a woman can wear sandals. She doesn't need to wear socks.